The Wealth of Nations, A Journey Through Economic Principles. In my years of study and observation, I have come to understand a fundamental truth about human nature and its relation to the prosperity of nations. It is not from the benevolence of the butcher, the brewer, or the baker that we expect our dinner, but from their regard to their own interest. This self-interest, when properly channeled, becomes a powerful force for the betterment of society. Consider, if you will, the intricate dance of commerce that unfolds in our markets daily. Each individual, pursuing their own advantage, inadvertently contributes to a greater good. The baker rises early to bake bread, not out of charity, but to earn his living. The farmer tends his crops with care, not for the abstract notion of feeding the masses, but to secure his income. Yet, through these self-interested actions, society as a whole benefits. This phenomenon, which I have termed the invisible hand, guides individuals to promote ends which were no part of their intention. It is as if an unseen force directs their efforts towards the greater benefit of society. This invisible hand is the cornerstone of a well-functioning economy, allowing for the efficient allocation of resources and the creation of wealth without the need for centralized control. Now, let us turn our attention to the remarkable effects of the division of labor. To illustrate this principle, I invite you to consider the manufacture of pins. In a pin factory where labor is divided, 10 workers, each specializing in a different task, can produce 48,000 pins in a day. Yet, if each of these workers were to attempt to make pins individually, from start to finish, they might struggle to produce even 20 pins each. This astounding increase in productivity is the result of three circumstances. First, the increase of dexterity in every particular workman. Second, the saving of time which is commonly lost in passing from one species of work to another. And lastly, the invention of a great number of machines which facilitate and abridge labor and enable one man to do the work of many. The division of labor extends far beyond the walls of a single factory. It permeates all aspects of society, allowing for specialization in countless trades and professions. This specialization, in turn, leads to innovations and efficiencies that drive economic growth and increase the wealth of nations. However, the division of labor is limited by the extent of the market. In a small village, for instance, one cannot find a baker, a butcher, and a brewer, each specializing in their trade. Instead, one person might perform all these functions, albeit less efficiently. As the market grows, so too does the opportunity for specialization. This principle explains why coastal regions and areas near navigable rivers tend to develop more rapidly than inland areas. The ease of transportation allows for a larger market, which in turn enables greater specialization and division of labor. Thus, the wealth of nations is intimately tied to the ability of its people to trade and exchange goods over wide areas. In considering the wealth of nations, we must understand the true measure of value. The real price of everything, what everything really costs to the man who wants to acquire it, is the toil and trouble of acquiring it. Labor, therefore, is the real measure of the exchangeable value of all commodities. A man is rich or poor according to the degree in which he can afford to enjoy the necessaries, conveniences, and amusements of human life. But after the division of labor has thoroughly taken place, it is but a very small part of these with which a man's own labor can supply him. The far greater part of them he must derive from the labor of other people, and he must be rich or poor according to the quantity of that labor which he can command, or which he can afford to purchase. While the invisible hand guides much of economic activity, there is a role for government in ensuring the proper functioning of markets and society. However, this role should be limited and focused. I propose that the sovereign has only three duties to attend to. First, the duty of protecting the society from the violence and invasion of other independent societies. Secondly, the duty of protecting, as far as possible, every member of the society from the injustice or oppression of every other member of it. And thirdly, the duty of erecting and maintaining certain public works and certain public institutions. The statesman who should attempt to direct private people in what manner they ought to employ their capitals would not only load himself with a most unnecessary attention, but assume an authority which could safely be trusted to no single person. The government that governs least governs best, particularly in matters of commerce and industry. In conclusion, the wealth of nations is not a fixed pie to be divided, but a growing abundance created through the division of labor, the extent of the market, and the invisible hand of self-interest. By allowing individuals the freedom to pursue their own interests within a framework of just laws and limited government intervention, nations can unlock unprecedented levels of productivity and prosperity. Let us embrace these principles for they hold the key to lifting all boats in the rising tide of economic growth. The nations that understand and apply these truths will find themselves on the path to enduring wealth and the betterment of their citizens' lives. This, I believe, is the true nature and cause of the wealth of nations.